Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West, West, West.
Issue number 7. This sexy, sultry voice that you're hearing and in love with is actually not Leander. This is Nick. So, hi, everyone. We are here recording the new awesome podcast. Leander has entered the Witness Protection Program. We haven't seen him in weeks. Not really sure where he is. Hopefully, he's safe. Apparently, he's been having some problems with things getting canceled that he enjoys. So, he's staying out of the limelight for just a little bit of time.
He showed up to my house at, like, 3 a.m. the other night.
Was he calling himself Ezekiel?
He didn't say a name, because he said if anybody asks for somebody, anybody, just tell them that they weren't here. So I don't know what he was going by, but he was really freaked out, and then he just asked me to put him up for like 2 hours and then left. So
That's Patrick, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I also want to point out, like, part of me feels like he might actually be a ghost, and BT does mystery guest for like 2 more minutes.
well, why don't we lead right into that? So we do have a guest today. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, guys. I'm Kat. I'm here at Griffin's all the time. I know there's definitely Griffin's people who listen to this, so we all know who Kat is. But for people who don't know me, I am, the best way I can put it, is a Disney-fueled anime superhero junkie. Like, I have Disney tattoos. Like, all my tattoos consist of either a superhero, anime, or Disney. And that's pretty much how I live my life.
You went into the Disney superhero realm, and now I have the Darkwing Duck theme. So that's, you know, that's where we are right now.
That's how we live. That's how I lead life, man.
So what have you guys been up to this week?
Not a whole lot, really. Mm-hmm. Just hanging out, doing my thing. So, yeah, just boring stuff in the life of Patrick. How about you now? What have you been up to this week?
Well, my computer just stopped working on Monday, so that's, you know, that's
nerd gas.
Yeah, I know.
Everyone's horrified in this room.
I was deep into Hollow Knight from the night before, too, and then was looking forward to spending some time Monday night getting through some more maps, and did not happen. So I've been working on that as well as just working. So yeah.
What if that's like a meta thing in the game? Like, once you get to a certain level, it just
kills your power supply
with your computer, and like. Yeah.
So that $10 game that I bought on Steam turns into an $80 game for a new power supply. Yeah, this is why I don't own consoles, you know?
They're working together. It's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, the game was actually made by the power supply company.
Oh, that's right. That makes sense. Australian power supplies. What is this?
So, I mean, for me, if anyone's ever met me, you obviously know I just don't sleep. I work a night job and a day job, so like that sleep thing gets lost in that mess. So
classic millennial. All
right. My hobbies include sleeping when I get a chance, but it's like it's kind of those moments where it's like I got to make choices. Do I want to sleep, or do I want to watch this new anime, or do I want to read this new comic? And I can tell you right now, my choice is usually the other thing.
Sleeping as a hobby might be a time to reevaluate your life.
I'm living in denial.
that's crazy.
It's like you have an option. You can like have downtime, or you can have sleep time. And like if you just have sleep time, then everybody's like, oh my god, did you see the new Game of Thrones? Oh my god, did you watch the new Netflix show? Oh my god, did you read the new comic book? And you're like, no, because I was sleeping.
I can legitimately tell you right now, there is one person every conversation we end with is, Kat, go get some rest.
that's fair. I don't know. I'm like, there's room in my life for Game of Thrones and a nap. So,
but I work a day and a night job, and at that point, you have to figure out the way to fill the spaces, because not sleeping is an art form, and figuring out how to not sleep the correct way so you can be awake for your day job is a talent, and it's there's a lot of logistics in this.
I mean, I watched the most recent 2 episodes of Game of Thrones last night, and before I started them, I was like, do I want 2 less hours of sleep, or do I want to watch 2 hours of Game of Thrones? And I went with Game of Thrones because, like Kat, I like to have a life, even if that life will be cut tragically short by lack of sleep.
I've already accepted that.
I will say, I did.
Like, I'm coming home.
I did end up staying awake a little longer last night than I had intended, because I was reading comics, so just, yeah. I guess I fell into the trap myself. Whatever.
It's all right.
So why don't we hop into the news? Patrick, you got anything for us?
So, other than what I guess you guys have more in-depth information about a few of my topics, but there's really two big things. One's just a small shout-out, and the other is a yes. So, firstly, Jack Kirby's 100th this past week. Just shouts out to my man, JK.
the king, Jack Kirby.
Yeah, the king. I was thinking about this last night, and, like, at the time he was starting, you know, comics weren't really that well-respected of a genre of stuff, and I'm sure he had lots of artistic peers from, like, his colleges or, like, or all this stuff, who were probably like, you do what? Like, at their class reunions and stuff, they're like, you draw comics?
Yeah.
What is even wrong with you?
I mean, the saddest part, though, is that still totally exists, though. Like, it totally does.
It does, but, like, now it's that he's, as, like, one of the most influential artists of, like, the 20th century, people are probably like, what?
If you're listening to this and you don't know who Jack Kirby is, I'm confused.
I can't do a spit take all over my computer.
No, there's two here. I'd be upset.
But the best way to describe Jack Kirby is Stan Lee made Marvel, and Jack Kirby made Stan Lee. That's about how you can, you know, that's a great description. I mean, he's also the creator of Darkseid, you know, the whole fourth world. Jack Kirby is a style that influenced things like Batman the Animated Series. So, yeah.
Let's just look up Kirby.
Yeah, just to mention his use of action lines is...
Kirby Dots!
Yeah.
Kirby Dots!
Yeah, he's pretty much the person responsible for all the action lines you see today in Western comics, for sure.
Yeah, he definitely... One of the things, like, his use of perspective and, like, over, like, pushing perspective to the point, like, fists being bigger than people's heads when they're punching. So it's, like, to create dynamism in the art. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kirby's amazing.
Yeah. I'm sure you could go on.
I'll stop on that one.
Yeah, the only other real piece of news I have is I'm pretty excited for this one because I love me some Aaron Magruder, but Aaron Magruder, who's the creator of Boondocks and Black Jesus, is partnering up with Will Packer, who is the producer of Straight Out of Compton, to make an original Amazon show called Black America, which is, it takes place in the present day where after the Civil War, the slaves were given their own country of, like, Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi, I want to say. So they have, like, their little nation.
So they're going to sweat to death.
Yeah, basically, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I really think the mosquitoes are going to play a huge part into this show.
They're just going to start carrying children off.
But,
oh, that went down a dark path fast.
It looks really cool just because I love both of those, that movie and those TV shows. So this will be really interesting. Coming on the whole revisionist history trend that's been going on now. Because Amazon has their, what is it, The Man in the High Castle?
Yeah, based on the Philip K. Dick novel.
Yep, which is about if Nazi Germany won World War II. And then I guess HBO's doing, like, a What If the Confederacy Had Won the Civil War show.
And that's by the showrunners of Game of Thrones.
Yep, that one's by the Game of Thrones showrunners. And so
I'm pretty sure I know what that's going to be about.
I mean, Game of Thrones is already popular for having white characters in prominence and black people and people of color as slaves, so, you know.
Yeesh. Shots fired.
So,
we're all bear witness to that one.
You know, not to cast any shade on anything like that.
Shade thrown. Shade thrown.
Yeah.
But black paint.
Shade thrown, yeah.
Jeez.
So, yeah, not to get too serious too quick, but that's the news I have.
Cool.
So, how about you guys?
What do you got?
So, I have the fact that Sony is now taking a major stake, and, like, major is honestly, like, the best way you can put it, because they should pretty much just own Funimation at this point, but they don't.
Right.
They're going to pay $143 million for 95% of Funimation, which is obviously, I hope everyone knows that Funimation is a licensing and anime distributor, which I had found out is actually based in Texas, which, like, blew my mind a little
bit.
That's weird. Like, it is, right? It's, like, a little odd. But their CEO is still going to be the same. They're still having, like, they're doing some talk through right now. And, I mean, the partnership, like, in my head, like, there's, like, slight fears with it because I don't know how much Sony is going to interfere with them. Because I am a big, I can't lie, there may be a big bias with Funimation because they may own my soul a little bit. I may have sold it to them a while ago and just mentioned it.
Funimation owns the rights to your soul and Sony owns the rights to Funimation. Then Sony owns your soul.
Yeah, you see the problem here? You see why I'm a little upset?
Yeah, I can see that.
Look for Cat's soul to appear in the Venom film.
That
would be like if you heard that Satan just got bought out by McDonald's. And you're like, oh, dang.
It's like, you would totally have thought that would have gone the other way.
Right. So, like, there's a little bit of concern because I'm not, I mean, the few things that I've tried to look through and find, there's not really, they didn't really necessarily say, hey, we're just going to let them do their thing. We just have the ability now to give them more rights to stuff because they actually have rights to things that I didn't know about because they actually own other companies. I think they own Amniplex, but I know they have the rights to Sword Art Online, which made me so excited because the Funimation streaming service, you get subs and dubs, which I love because I can't just focus on subs because I'm that person.
So do you think that this will have a positive effect on, like, dubbing and subbing, or is it going to...
That is my fear, and that's, like, the biggest thing is, like, I want them to basically leave Funimation alone when they sub and dub things because they're actually very good at, so, like, with Attack on Titan, about 3 episodes in, they had already began dubbing everything.
Okay.
So they had started that, and I'm really hoping that they just leave them be and just let them continue with what they're on, because I'm not, like, Sony, I don't really know. I mean, they've done so many things, like Spider-Man is, like, the perfect example where they're like, we're gonna do this 14 times, and it's gonna stick one time, right? And that's kind of, like, the thing where I'm like, I don't... Like, it's there's, like, that... worry
because and it's Sony parent, like, it's Sony Japan that is doing this.
Yes, because their big thing is what they're selling this as is they have a creative pipeline straight to Japan, which in my head I'm like, no, that can totally work. It'll probably make things semi easier for them to get the rights of, which they have the rights of Your Name, by the way, which is side note, coming out later this year on Blu-ray. So excited. Beautiful story.
So basically what I saw, and I was reading a couple quotes from, like, the Sony execs who were part of this, and basically what they want after, like, doing Spider-Man and all this stuff is, like, they want to have something like, this is, like, exactly what they say, but they wanted something like Marvel that just has a cast of, like, hundreds of characters and, like, storylines that they can then... like, potentially used to make into films or TV shows or something like that. But as far as the initial creative process goes of actually creating those characters and those stories, they basically want to leave that to the artist as,
like,
it is.
And that's my biggest thing is, like, because I don't... because Marvel... Disney has obviously interceded in Marvel many times, and that is the fear that lies, that kind of, like, lays dormant at the moment because... I don't want them to be like Disney, where they intercede in things they shouldn't.
I don't feel like Disney has done that, though. That's entirely a side conversation.
Yeah. Moving on. Just, like, side note, but, I mean, that's my only concern, is because Sony has done things where you're like, why? And I'm like, Funimation, I mean, like, again, like I said again, kind of biased, but at the same time, they do fairly well for what they have. And it's one of those things of, I don't want them to mess with it too much. Just kind of let them do their own thing. Yes, bring more in, because you can definitely get more subscribers now, because they're going to have Sword Art Online, like, have capabilities to reach out for that. With the last season of Fairy Tail coming out as well, they're also going to be able to pull that into hopefully much quicker. So I don't really know what this means for their deal with Crunchyroll, though, because they do have a deal with them right now. I don't know what's I don't know what's going to happen with that. So Crunchyroll may or may not take a hit,
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of up in the air, and it's going to be one of those things of technically this deal hasn't gone through yet because they're still talking it out about certain things.
Yeah.
But it's pretty, I mean, at this point, the fact that they've announced it,
it's pretty much
it's going to happen. They're just ironing out some of the details.
I'm sure percentages could change.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, what do you got for us, Nat?
Well, I got one that I know we were we've talked about previous to the show is Nightmare Before Christmas Zero's Journey. This is going to be a Tokyo Pop full color miniseries.
Single issues, and then they're going to come out with the volumes.
So this is not being done as a traditional manga, which is where the you know, Tokyo Pop generally.
Well, they've done a lot of Disney stuff because they did.
Oh, yeah, they have a Disney license.
Yeah, because they did Beauty and the Beast, and then there's another one that I've read because you're all going to learn that Kat actually really loved cute, really, really loves the cutesy little girly manga anime things. Like, it's just, I'm like, oh my god, it's so cute, I have to read it. I don't even like Disney princesses, and I literally read a Disney manga princess about a seventh princess who's coming into the different Disney worlds. Like, I have read it.
Actually sounds pretty cool.
Well, meeting me, would you ever be like, oh, Kat will totally... No, you...
I try not to make judgments when I first meet people. But you're right.
It's not even meeting me. Just knowing me in this moment, Nat, would you have guessed I have ever read that?
That's very true.
Or but all of them.
So this is supposed to be... It's a sequel to The Nightmare Before
Christmas. They call it a quote-unquote sequel, but from what I read, it's not a sequel. It's a... This is a side story. Zero gets lost in Christmas Town.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, they say sequel, but it's a lot of them... A lot of things that I have seen is, like, an expansion on the universe.
Well, of course, because, you know... What we need is more expanded universes. I'm not excited about this. It's just one of those things where it's like, okay, well, that's kind of cool.
Oh, no, I mean, I think it's pretty cool, too. My only thing is it's like, Disney's like, oh, well, we've approached Tim Burton so many times for sequels. And I'm like, how do you sequel The Nightmare Before? What are you going to sequel that?
What questions were left behind?
Honestly, I had so many questions when it comes to the place with the seven, with all the different worlds. So many questions.
About that specifically. But is that better to not know? Like, is it better to just have that be, like, something
in... So, for the movie itself, it was great. It didn't have to be expounded upon. However, the fact that it might be, in my mind, is also great.
Okay, that's true. Maybe you do it that's, like, just do a story related to
the Do we want to do a fun fact moment? Because I have, like, fun facts on Disney. So, originally... Tim Burton got this idea while he was an animator for Disney by watching, I can't remember exactly where, but he was watching a Halloween display be taken down as a Christmas display was being put up. And he actually ended up writing, originally, by the way, Nightmare Before Christmas was a poem that he wrote.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he originally wrote it, and I'm just going to tell you right now, like, in that poem, Jack Skellington is a douchebag. He's not, like, cute and full of fun intentions. Like, he Santa shows up and he's like, I'm doing this and I don't care what you're saying. He's like, Santa's like, I don't think this is a good idea. He's like, I don't care, I'm doing it, kind of deal.
That's actually kind of awesome.
And I can kind of see why he hasn't let the rights of that go, because he was such a big part. Like, he came up with the original idea. Yeah. He wrote a poem.
Well, it's when you kind of talk to
Once you write a poem.
It's everything's over.
Exactly. Well, stylistically, when you talk Tim Burton, people point to The Nightmare Before Christmas as the aesthetic, you know, like, that's what people are referencing.
Like that's really, like, his first big breakout movie to get his, to, like, that really showed his entire je ne sais quoi of filmmaking.
Yeah, you can, I mean, the first Batman is dripping with, like, Burton-isms, but it's not so candy-colored the way, I guess Batman Returns would actually be a better example of, like, the Burton-esque style.
Yeah, so, that one would probably be better.
But now we are tangent-ridden today.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay. I was about to go on another tangent, but let's keep this rolling.
Yeah.
More news.
Yeah, what else
is that? It's for anybody who's curious, too, that is supposed to come out spring 2018, right? Yep. Like, the first issue, I believe? Yep. Okay, so a poster has been released from Netflix. They are going to redo Saint Seiya, which I'm super stoked about. It came from the 80s, which is... you know, beyond my time, but, you know, of course, as a little kid, I'm like, Toonami! And they're like, we're gonna play Saint Seiya! And I'm like, oh my god, the show is so cool!
So for those of us who don't know anything about Saint Seiya...
So Saint Seiya is an anime that was from, like, 1986 to 1989, and it's about this kid named Seiya who ends up somehow getting this Zodiac armor, which I don't know, I didn't know this, but apparently Pegasus is a Zodiac. I didn't know that. Somewhere, Pegasus is a Zodiac, apparently. So he gets Pegasus armor, and his job is to protect I believe she is the reincarnate, and someone, if you want to correct me on that, you're more than welcome to, I won't be offended, the reincarnate of Athena, the goddess Athena, and all of the Greek gods are fighting the world, trying to take it for whatever they want. So
what?
Yeah, it's
it sounds pretty cool.
I think the first enemy that they see there, they have some of them on Netflix already. So, and they actually came out recently with a fighting game for Saint Seiya 2, which I still haven't played. I really should, like, it brought back to my mind because I played a demo for it. It was awesome.
Nice.
But it's going to be CG, which a lot of people complain. You lose that anime touch to it. After watching Ruby, I get over that really quickly.
Okay.
So.
I couldn't get over that with Ajin.
Yeah, that one I lost interest in really quickly, and I don't know if it was because that one was
also because it's really kind of a bad story.
Yeah, I was like, this is cool. They don't what?
From a philosophical standpoint, for me, you know, I look to anime as being that lifeblood of keeping 2D animation alive, so that it makes me upset when I see CG anime.
You know, that's totally fair. I get it.
But then again, it can be great because, like, watching something like the most recent example I can think of would be like Moana.
Yeah,
you know, like that's an amazing.
So,
CG
other fun
thing.
Fact: I've never seen Moana, and that's because
and
I'm in
all self a Disney.
Yeah, I was about
you
to want say, to
know
like...
the most insulting part to that? I'm like, you darn right I do, because I do not. CG is not my thing. Like, with animation films like Disney and stuff like that, I think of Sleeping Beauty, which is the most gorgeous movie I have ever seen, and it's so beautiful artistically. But CG, to me, I feel like you lose that artistic, that, like, the guy who originally did Sleeping Beauty saw Gothic paintings, and that's what those backgrounds are I can't remember the exact
Mary Blair.
So, I feel like you lose that with all the CG, and that's why I don't necessarily watch them, but.
we can have a philosophical discussion.
Yeah, right.
I went to school for animation, so I'm not gonna get too deep into this conversation.
No, it's probably a good one.
In both directions, although the best animated series of all time is Batman the Animated Series. Next piece of news.
Wow. All right. Not drawing lines in the sand.
No, I don't draw lines in the sand. It's just fact.
He draws lines on the paper.
I draw lines. Oh, draw lines on the paper.
I will hit you
later. right. So Netflix has picked up another animated series. It's called Cannon Busters. It's actually based on a short-lived comic book by LaShawn Thomas. And weirdly enough, you talked about Boondocks earlier. LaShawn Thomas was one of the illustrators and character designers who worked on Boondocks. So this was I have the issues for Cannon Busters. I cannot for the life of me remember what the damn story was about. It's like an adventure story, but...
I have no idea what you're talking about, so we're all on the same page.
The art is gorgeous. LaShawn Thomas is a really interesting style. He has a really odd nose theory. Shout out to Kim if you're listening. but I'm excited about this, especially if it's going to be a 2D animated series. That's what it seems like, once again. But it's being done by... I guess Netflix has optioned a couple of different animation studios to do anime, so we'll see. This seems like this is going to be a full Netflix production too, not something that Netflix has picked up the rights to distribute, but something that Netflix is actually producing, so that's cool in my mind. Nice. I also have a little bit of a Hellboy film news. So Professor Broom has been cast for the new Hellboy film.
I forgot they were doing that. I was just like, I already lost.
This is great. Ian McShane has been cast as Professor Broom. You may know him as the evil voice from Kung Fu Panda, the villain, as well as, I don't know, the lead character in Deadwood. He was also, he's on American Gods. He was I can't think of the character's name, but he was in two episodes of Game of Thrones with the Hound.
Okay.
He had the preacher for... That has
oh,
a village.
That guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So gotcha. I think that's amazing casting.
If anybody was curious, I was totally Googling on my laptop to figure out who that was.
Oh, yeah.
That is a fantastic actor. And to go alongside David Harbour's Hellboy, that's going to be great.
No, it is going to be cool.
There was some other casting news, right, Kat, that we... Lion King?
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, I was like, yeah. I mean, I'm going to refer to Nat because all I do is butcher names in my lifetime. Like, I'm like, I can read American names. And they're like, no, you totally mispronounced that. And I'm like, I'm going to go walk and sit in my corner of shame. But yeah, Lion King live action is maybe found their scar, which is...
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I'm sorry, that is so many verbs. This is deteriorating so fast.
This is going to be awesome casting.
Well, they have, what was it? Glover.
Donald Glover as Simba.
You've got the original Mufasa, which of course I'm just like, I'm in!
James Earl Jones is Mufasa.
And I think I don't know if it was ever confirmed or not, but they were talking to Beyonce about being Nala.
Still talking to Beyonce. Now, they have not cast Rafiki yet. And that's a hard one for me.
I think Seth Rogen is going to be in it.
He's Timon.
I don't remember who Pumbaa is, but it's another like...
No, he's Pumbaa.
Is he Pumbaa? Who's Timon then?
Oh, we're incoming. But if you don't know who Chiwetel Ejiofor is, he is he was the operative in Serenity, as well as recently he was Baron Mordor in Doctor Strange. Mordo.
So they're getting. I mean, they're like picking up steam.
Sorry, J.R. Tolkien.
I mean, there's the fun fact too of Aladdin actually just did their casting as well, which as everybody's putting out, they're like they're not whitewashing it, which I get, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
The girl who played the Pink Power Ranger is going to be Jasmine.
Yep.
For the new Power Ranger.
There's a little bit of controversy around that.
Hispanic?
She's actually Indian.
Oh, is she? Okay, I did not know that. So,
Billy Eichner has been cast as Timon, and John Oliver is Zazu.
Oh, that's right.
This
movie's picking up steam really quickly, and honestly, like, if they mess it up, like, no one will ever let this go. Like, Disney will, I feel like it will be a forever shame on Disney. Like, there will be no way anyone will ever let it go.
Well, I mean, judging by their most recent live-action adaptations, or I should say, quote, live-action, because The Jungle Book was awesome.
A lot of people that I've talked to didn't like it, which was I haven't
Jungle Book.
Yeah, seen it because I'm not like one of those people who is into like talking animals. I'm like, it's a weird thing, and I can't do
it. I'd watch that whole movie just to hear Christopher Walken sing.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. I want to be like you.
that whole movie is worth it just for like little 4 minute
speaking
musical number.
As you know, of course, the love of Disney and all the old animated ones. Beauty and the Beast was beautiful. I cried 4 times. Like when, oh my god, when Emma Watson came out in her yellow dress, I literally was crying.
I still haven't seen that one. One's a bit more rough for me because Beauty and the Beast means. Being that it's the Academy Award nominated Beauty and the Beast for Best Picture, that's kind of like, it feels really weird to me to see an adaptation of that.
So there was, I mean, they added extra songs to it. Like, there's one that I will, like, if I am listening to the soundtrack and I hear, will rip my heart to pieces.
Interesting.
I have a very huge connection with music, though. Like, I can honestly say I will like a series 1,000 times more when I like the soundtrack. Like Jessica Jones. Like Beauty and the Beast.
Like Steven Universe.
I wasn't going to say it, but obviously. So,
If a movie / TV series has a good soundtrack to it, I will usually connect to it even more.
Okay.
So.
That's fair.
Alright.
Do you have any more
other
news?
This one's kind of on an older one, but as you will find out, I'm a slight Power Rangers freak. I just Power Rangers all day, every day. So the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers issue 20 has been said that this is going, you're going to find out that there were actually Power Rangers in the 1960s. And just seeing I don't know if it's the cover, I'm pretty sure it's the cover though, and I'm so excited to get this issue, but you see the Red Ranger mask, and in his visor, you can see the moon, and you see monster footsteps. I'm so excited.
That's really cool.
And then of course, like there's also the announcement they are talking about making Tommy Oliver a girl. Which apparently is like a giant thing, like the Doctor Who thing.
Now that would be for the film universe.
For the film universe, they were talking about making Tommy Oliver a girl, which everybody's like, how can you have a girl named Tommy? And I'm like, I'm thinking of like, you know, the person that no one likes right now who's named Tommy.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's totally doable. Who cares?
You just make it an I instead of a Y.
If you even want to go that far with
seriously.
It, you know, like that's.
Yeah.
So I think that would be cool coming as the fact of, being that 5-year-old kid, and I could be wrong, but I still think to this day, every leader of the Power Rangers has always been a male. I want to see a female lead, like, just because I want to see that. It's like, oh, male leads, they're so tiresome, I'm done with that. How about a female one?
Well, yeah, I have no problems with this at all. Well, we were talking earlier, like, the potential for the love triangle between Jason, Tommy, and Kim would just be, you could subvert it in many different ways. You can still do the love triangle, but you could have maybe Jason's affection for Tommy, you know? And
so,
then,
one of the things that I have read about this, too, is, like, someone commented on it, it's like, this is, like, a huge, like, you know, of course you're always going to have people who are unhappy with it. It's like, they're like, this is a huge spit on the old series and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, they're like, they better make a female or a female character a male. And I'm like, why? Now you have 3 females and 3 males.
Yeah.
Somebody named to me an evenly like, superhero team and evenly...
Distributed
male and female. You can't because it's just not a thing, which is whatever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that would be really cool to do that. And the thing is now you have a chance for... Because we all know it. Tommy ended up being the leader of the Power Rangers. Like, people can sit here and tell me, oh, it was Jason. I'm like,
no. No, it was Tommy.
It was Tommy. And the thing is I think that would be so cool to have, of course, the female... The strongest ranger is always the one they always bring in second. Yeah. And it's like, that would be so cool to have that. And I think it would be great. And the thing is people are like, well, you have 2 alpha males and they've learned to work together. And I'm like, you can have alpha females. I am one. it's a thing. So.
Yeah. And the characterization in that movie, like the teens, the rangers themselves were the best part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Their relationships to each other was extremely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Each of the characters had their own specific problems, and it was...
Yeah, watching the Power Rangers movie personally, I was just like, can they all just, like, have a coffee for, like, 30 minutes? Can we just have, like, a 20-minute scene of them just, like, eating bagels together? Like, I don't really want to see the giant robot fights are cool, don't get me wrong, but let's just have them, like, going for a drive.
The campfire sequence stole the movie.
I thought it was great, and that's the thing is, like, the other thing with me, too, is, like, not to keep discussing this, but you could even have to the point, like, Trini in that movie is, like, it's like, she doesn't say it out loud, but it's all pretty well known. I'm like, she's gay.
Yeah.
You could have Tommy be gay, too. Like, you could have that dynamic in there.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so much opening and potential when you add another female character to this who's brand new to open this up for something totally different.
And in the universe, it would parallel Rita, who was the female Green Ranger.
Exactly.
So, like, you... Yeah, that I don't. Yeah. To me, once again, it's a non-issue that people turn into an issue.
That's always how it's going to be. I just think it would be and I'm all for it because I think it would be really interesting. Because yes, for nostalgia's sake, cool. But I feel like if we're going to do this, we're doing something new. Let's try something new. Let's take that leap and do it. I think that would make it something new, but it's still old. So it's one of those things I'm like, I'm sold for it. Let's try it.
I know this seems to be baffling to people, but surprisingly, as I've come to learn, there are more than one gay peoples in the world out there. And
so other
like,
fun
you
fact,
can have...
there's totally one sitting in this room. I don't know if you guys know who it is.
There is.
It's like 1 out of 3 right now. And I don't know, like, fun secret, it's me. But,
but yeah, so like, I think that's really weird when I see that, like, and people are like, oh, you can't have 2 gay people in one team together, you can't have 2 blank people in one team together, you can't have 2, and I'm just like, there's more than one, right?
Yeah.
Like, if there was only one, then they wouldn't even be able to have a relationship, and it wouldn't be an issue in the first place.
You know what? The current Power Rangers have 4 minorities on their team.
Yes!
Everybody get out of the room!
There's more than one minority in the world?
Alright, anyway.
Moving on.
Reading all the superhero team-ups, I would never have guessed.
Ouch! Patrick just shots fired today.
He's on a roll, He's just, like, reloading.
Marvel and DC burned.
So, last bit of news, probably, before we head on to reviews. So, Raven has been cast for the Titans... WB streaming service. Yeah. Tegan Croft, who's a relative unknown. I guess she's got a...
I didn't know how... I had no idea who she was, because they said that she was a newcomer, and I can't remember what they said. She's,
like, an Australian miniseries or movie that's coming out soon.
I just assumed that she was the Tegan from Tegan and Sarah, but I may be mistaken. I assume that's the only Tegan in the world, and there can't be more than one of those.
No.
But the biggest thing I got from this is she looks 12.
Dude, I went with 9. Like, if you don't know who this person is, like, Google her, because it's like, she's a teen titan. I'm like, you mean adolescent titan?
Yeah, no, exactly.
More like preteen titan.
I'm a little jarred by this casting. Maybe these are old photos, because there's no age on IMDb. I couldn't figure out how old
really?
She was.
Really? All right, Google it is.
but how are you going to juxtapose Nightwing, who theoretically has been Robin already and is now, you know, like 18 college, and then like a 9 to 12 year old teen titan, and the one who's supposed to have, you know, the darkest past, she's the daughter of a demon. It seems weird, especially against Young Justice, which is also going to be on that network, where it's Young Justice is dealing with the younger kids. I felt like Titans should have been like the 17-18 crowd, a bit more like Power Rangers, a little older, the ones that had been moved on from being sidekicks, and I don't know, it's weird. So it just seems odd. I could be totally off base.
Because personally to me, Raven's always had that kind of timeless look to her.
Yeah.
But also like a very dark, but like very easily switched over to that dark, haggard. Like she goes from being an obvious teen to being a potentially like ancient soul. Like very, very back and forth. So do you think that Miss Croft has that ability just by looking at her?
I would say sure. I mean, there's a reason they cast her.
Okay.
That would be the thing. I hope they go full makeup, you know, screw up the skin tone so it's almost blue-ish, pale.
Yeah.
Then dye her hair black, because she looks a little white bread.
In case anybody's curious, I literally just Googled her age and I can't find it.
That's weird.
That is so weird, that's right? Weird.
Well, and maybe she is a little bit older and the photo could be like a casting photo from a few years ago. Maybe she's ageless. she's not actually a demon child. Instead, she's a vampire. So,
yeah,
that's but no, I mean, more power to this kid for being cast. It's just, what is the rest of the direction of the show?
Yeah, I'm going to be curious now. It's going to be one of those things of just watching who else they cast as who and just kind of sitting back and seeing.
I mean, they can really do an interesting thing if they do an older Starfire, an older Nightwing, and then potentially, I don't know if they're going to have Cyborg in the cast, but maybe do an older Cyborg.
But they keep putting him in the Justice League. So yeah. I don't know if they will.
But DC has separated the universes completely. So.
But in the Titans, Cyborg and Beast Boy have always been like BFFs. Like,
and that
Cyborg
was the most disappointing
Beast Boy
part
forever.
To me when they made him a part of the Justice League. Is like they were best bros, and I feel like that entire dynamic is now gone.
I mean, take Cyborg too, but like, take Beast. If you're going to put him in the Justice League, then Beast Boy should be there alongside
of him.
Well,
maybe you run off a play that Cyborg actually becomes like the mentor to the Titans and leaves the League. Like, he's part of the formation of the League, but he's like, we have these new heroes that we've inspired. Why don't I take a step and help lead them?
How can he be mentoring his own best bud? Because Beast Boy's still in the Titans.
You age up Beast Boy a little bit so that they're around the same age, but, you know, he's mentoring him in terms of coming to grips with what he is, and then,
Be
best buds, hanging out, going to clubs. You know,
going to clubs.
Victor trying to cover his silver and red eye thing, and then, you know.
You mean going to the pizza parlor after playing like 24 hours of video games?
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I would love to see Cyborg in the Titans, though. I think that would be something. But you could do, like, what I was saying, like a trio of older kids, and then have, like...
Well, that's what they've done in their animated universe, is Starfire is the lead, but Starfire is definitely, like my age, which is like 24, so
yeah,
you know, she's on the older realm, and Nightwing is also a part of the Teen Titans, but he's not a part of the Teen Titans because he's, like, their other mentor, so I get what you're saying. So, yeah, no, that's totally a possibility.
Technically, he was Robin on the Teen Titans during, like, the classic run, and became Nightwing, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right,
so we want to get into reviews then?
I think we've hit that point.
Sweet. Who would like to start?
I mean, since we were talking about Justice League, we can start it off. can start it off. So, this week, and this is my first introduction to Justice League as well. I haven't been keeping up with it because I have, you know, 40 other things to keep up with. So I've been reading Justice League Legacy, which is our new story arc for the Justice League, and basically, I read this on Comixology, and it's like, their future children come back from another timeline, and I'm like, and I'm sold! I will do that every single time, and I don't know what it is, but, I mean, I've read it, and it's the first exposure I have to it, so it's kind of a little confusing, because they do make a jump back to, like, 15 and 19, like, issues 15 through 19 about some crystal I have no idea about, and I'm like, oh, should probably Google that.
Interesting.
And, so, the main writer is Brian Hitch, and then Fernando Parison? I am sorry, I will butcher names all day long.
Fernando Parison is the penciler, right?
Yeah, he's their main, I believe he's their main artist on that one, but, I like the art style anyways, and usually I can straight up admit, like, if I don't like an art style of something, it'll immediately suck me out of the story, and I won't read it.
Me too!
It's kind of one of those things, if I don't like your art style, I'm not gonna read it. So this is just like an introduction. Of course, it's like it's part one. So I'm not gonna. You're of course left with more questions than answers. Blah blah, normal stuff. But I mean, I read it and I was like, the first read through, it's kind of like I read it and I'm like, I don't know. Like I'm just like left with that meh kind of deal. I wasn't like, oh my god, I gotta keep reading. It was, I guess I read the next one.
Gotcha. Okay.
And. I mean, I'm pretty excited about it because you can even look at the cover and kind of tell whose parents are who. I have some questions on who is, you know, whose parents of certain kids that I've seen on here.
Mm-hmm.
But other ones, I'm like, there's definitely a Superman and Wonder Woman kid, which I'm like sold for all day long because that would be like, you know, it's a literal like Kryptonian and half Amazon, half God, and I'm like the most powerful thing in the world.
I hate that idea so much.
and I love it. I'm just like, yes.
Right.
Too obvious. And then of course you have Aquaman. Looks like he's going to be your main villain in this story arc. It looks like it looks like he's going to be the part of the downfall in the future. They come back from where the future they come back
interesting.
To. And Cypher's kid's actually really interesting too. He has a son, and he's interesting is the best way I can put it. But like he and Aquaman also he has a daughter, which I don't know a lot about like Aquaman kid wise, but most of the exposure I've had to Aquaman is his child is always a boy. So I thought that was like the fact that it's a daughter kind of like I was like ooh.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. And Aquaman has been. With Mera for so long in the comics that it makes sense for that. There's actually a pairing that works and makes sense in, you know, the stories. I've heard there's a little bit of that Brian Hitch has been sort of pushing Jessica Cruz and Hal Jordan. No, Jessica Cruz and Barry Allen. So one of the Green Lanterns and the Flash.
Well, I'm looking right now because the Flash definitely has a kid. And I'm like kind of looking right now and I'm like,
isn't there a character named Cruz too?
There might be. I can't. Like I said, I was mostly just trying to figure out whose kids were what. Cause
just,
like,
because they don't answer, right?
No, they don't really give you an idea. The only one that you were positive on is, of course, the Wonder Woman and Superman kid because he's got Wonder Woman's tiara like on his arm. He has her lasso, and then he's wearing a Superman cape. And I'm like, if you're not their kid, like this is just a bunch of lies on paper.
Right. That's
so I mean, I don't know. Like I'm not like, oh my god, I must read the next issue, because like, of course you're left at the very end, and it's like typical story thing where it's like, and it's your fault that this has happened, and it's like, angsty teenagers with their parents! Oh my god! No!
Oh my gosh. All right, so it's a meh?
Pretty much. It's probably what it's gonna sit at. I'm hoping it gets better. I really am. But I was kind of left like, I guess I'll read the next one. Awesome. I just want to know who all the kids' parents are at this point.
Well, that's interesting.
That's true. Right. Or whoever's true wants to go next.
Well, I have Mech Cadet U, number one. This is at a Boom Studios. It's written by Greg Pak with art by Takashi Miyazawa. This was awesome. This is a... I'm going to guess it's Earth. That's not explicitly said, but it's a future world where we have been visited by mechs, and these mechs are sentient. They come and they choose captains, pilots, question mark. Still issue one, so there's a lot of unanswered questions.
So are we on, like, rings, like rings where it's like, I choose you as to be my owner, like, kind of deal?
Yeah, sort of something like
that. Like, the sword chooses you.
The sword chooses you. That's exactly how it is. But your lead character, Sanford Yu, is not a cadet at the school where all of the pilots come from. He is a janitor. So he sits and watches as these kids get the opportunity to train and become these pilots. Once again, it's not clear in the first issue whether or not they actually sit inside of them or they're, like, directing them from afar.
Or right on their backs.
Or right on their backs, something like, or on the shoulder, you know, the classic pose. but he is ostracized and comes across one of the mechs that may or not have been on Earth for some time, and the mech chooses him. So there's this thought that these kids who've worked extremely hard to be these the best of the best, and then they don't get the opportunity to be a pilot or be one of these, you know, mech cadets. So there's a bit of the Iron Giant because they don't seem to communicate, like, clearly. They don't they have their own language. There's a little bit of Evangelion. That's like a school preparing people to be pilots, and it's a specific grouping. There's definitely some tones that they're manipulating who the pilots can be. So there may be a darker force in the government that runs the school. This was awesome, though. Like,
There always has to be a darker force with government, though. Oh, it has to be a thing, so...
Yeah, especially, like... And the art is freaking gorgeous. It's kind of like... It has anime sensibilities or manga sensibilities.
That's
kind of
what I was... Nat has the variant cover, and I have the normal cover, and it does. It definitely has that anime-esque feel to it a little bit,
I definitely picked it up and was flipping through it just because Miyazawa was one of the illustrators for a while for Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
And it's a really great art style, and it definitely has that classic giant mech manga feel.
Well, and one of the things that it does really well is the panels aren't complicated. There's easy storytelling. The guttering is not overlapping. We're dealing with story that is followable. You can actually read the book. And then there's a little surprise at the end that reminds me heavily of Evangelion and maybe the group doing the wrong things for the students. So yeah, absolutely love this. I will be subscribing to this book. I'm all over it. This is a great debut. Great debut.
Yeah. I'm going to hate on it just for a minute, because it kind of lost me. I was totally drawn in by the cover, the artistic team doing it, obviously Pak and Miyazawa.
Yeah.
But it lost me in the minute because just the intro exposition is like a guy lecturing all the cadets about all these giant robots, and like from a writing perspective, the big lecture telling the reader what is all happening, that's kind of played out, and it's a little contrived at this point. So that's all I'm
gonna say. I had a feeling you were
gonna
say that.
Yeah.
So as an introductory thing, you think that's
they could have, so the reason that I didn't like it specifically is because they just could have done without it. Like, the rest of the story, like you were saying, is laid out so simplistically and so easy. I shouldn't say simplistic, it's a bad thing, but easy to follow enough that they could have just left that out and included it. There's a big difference between explicit and implicit storytelling.
There are two reasons that I completely disagree with you.
Okay.
One is the fact that you have to actually show the motivations for your lead character in that sequence, he is a passerby watching this, and he shouldn't be. He's not supposed to be there while a conference is going on. He's cleaning behind the things. So your thought that your lead is in that audience, you're like, oh, okay, so we're introducing our lead character. It's like, we are. He's cleaning up the shit in the back. So he's and there. And then the second point to that is the character that they talk about in the exposition comes into play as part of the main story. So you introduce him while also ostracizing your lead, so you get the themes of what your lead's motivation is and where he wants to be, as well as what's going to be the past and the turning point for your hero.
So that's all fine and dandy, and I totally get where you're coming from. It's just specifically the way it's laid out does not feel like a lecture for these cadets. It feels like exposition for the audience.
Okay.
So, the lecture...
And
the
I mean, lecture I feel like we're not gonna reach an endless argument.
It's also 2 pages.
So. Yeah.
That's only 2 pages like, of it. Oh, dear God.
And it, yeah. Argue about page 1 and 2.
You know. It lost me in the first 2 pages. So.
Ah, you're missing out. Yeah. I will say that. You're missing out on 2 pages.
I'm definitely gonna keep looking at it just because it was interesting. Not quite gonna pull it yet.
Fair enough.
That's what I'm going to say about it. Because it is a compelling story, compelling art, compelling everything. We'll see how it unfolds. Personally, I'm just a dick about that kind of stuff, so, you know.
You heard it here first.
You know what? You're the way with writing that I am about illustration. Yeah. So.
All right, cool. Fine. Apparently I'm going to be the middle party.
Neither of you are going to say it, so I'll just come out and say it. I'm a douche about that stuff, so boom. There we go.
There we go.
You heard it here first.
So, yeah, all right, I guess I'll be the middle party, which is not a good sign.
All right, well, Patrick, what do you have for us today?
Okay, so I decided, I think it was 2 weeks ago, to pick up Mother Panic. This is DC's Young Animals sort of run. I don't know why I haven't up until this point. It's always looked compelling to me. I love her costume. I love, like, this whole sort of... It's like... I knew nothing about it at all, just like seeing the covers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to pick this up right in the middle. This is issue number 9. I should probably mention art written by Jody Hauser, art by Jean-Paul Leon. And so it was everything I wanted it to be in this comic. I didn't know anything about. It's basically like a refreshing look on Gotham City and still like the classic Batman style of, this young person going around, vigilante justice with these like really weird, creepy criminal, like this, the main bad guy in this that she fights is wearing a Gotham City coroner body bag as like his costume.
Whoa.
And so she's just like...
We've stepped into dark territory.
Yeah, and so she's like at the club all dressed up and she's like, all right, I'm going to go out to the back, is like taking a couple sips from her flask and she's like, the guy shows up and she's like, perfect, I was using myself as bait to attract this creepy pervert guy, and he shows up, and she, I have no idea where the story was before this, what his deal is, what her deal is,
right?
But this is
I
amazing.
Have heard very good things about it, and I think from my understanding, she is actually a,
She's a socialite, she had left Gotham and come back.
But
and,
I
like,
thought that she had something else in her background as well, like she was abused or something.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
so it,
there's some messed up stuff.
It does get...
Which I, like...
It does
it
get into
horrible.
That.
It
actually.
Sounds horrible, but I'm like super fascinated with like reading about that.
No, it actually does get into that in this issue. So there's a couple flashbacks to her talking to a nun, who she, I guess she was in an orphanage or a convent for a while, something like that. Because she's talking to her, and this nun is going off like blah 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 blah, and she's like, yes, Mother Patrick, yes, Mother Patrick, and then the nun keeps getting on her back and she's like, yes, Mother Panic, and then the nun slaps her and is like, I hate that nickname. So obviously that's the title of the book and the character's name, but the it's not the nun, it's the girl who's who is Mother Panic in this. And then also, so going back to when she's like in the alley, she's beating up this guy with her like ridiculous brass knuckles.
And, yeah.
I'm like sold. Like, I think I'm gonna go pick this up when we're done talking.
I know. I'm pulling this. This is on my list from now on. There's like these amazing interspersed panels in the fight scene that one is like a tomato with maggots crawling out of it, or wine being poured into a broken glass. Just right in the middle of this super intense fight scene.
It just makes it feel so much more horrifying for some reason. And
you're
it's like
why do these images. Why are these images here? I don't like it. But
exactly.
I like that I don't like it.
You're like, your skin's crawling a little bit, and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Ooh, the Batman.
Yeah. Yep, and then the Batman shows up for a minute, and he's just like, doing good, kid. In his, you know, Batman way. And so drags the guy off. Luckily, he's already in a body bag, so you don't have to do too much transitioning there. And, yeah, then we get a little bit more of the of her backstory at the end, where she just like pretty much burns the nun alive in the nunnery, and the nun's like slapping her around, and then she's just like, nope, done with this, and knocks her unconscious.
So I guess
I'm
gonna go check out Griffin's back issues.
I know, I'm so interested in what's happening, and then it also looks like she is a cyborg. Perhaps, or has like some sort of cybernetic enhancements of some sort. So all in all, so many amazing things happening in this that I had no idea about, and now I want to have all the ideas about.
All of them at once.
Yep. So that's my review of Mother Panic. I'm getting it. Shame on me for not reading this before.
I know, I feel a little ashamed right now.
I was really impressed by like the first run, like the first five issues of Mother Panic.
Definitely, someone has talked to me about it, and they were telling me that it's like really good, and they are not sure why I'm not reading it, because it would probably be right up my alley, and I'm just like, there's a lot of things like that I haven't done. But mm-hmm.
I thought Mother Panic was the strongest book to come out of the Young Animal line. There was definitely, like, some... It just seems... It's so interesting. And seeing a flip side of Gotham, like, dealing with what the socialites are in Gotham City, and somebody who isn't related to the Bat family and sort of gives the middle finger to Batman, you know? Mm-hmm. Or actually does.
I mean, honestly, I kind of stand here and I'm, like, thinking of Batwoman, because I know that she didn't get along with him when she first showed up as well. Because it was another one of those. She's like... You know, as it goes, well, suck it.
And she's using the name, so mm-hmm. that's an issue.
Yeah, that's
The imagery implies the White Rabbit. Like, her look is... Because the way she looks with the costume on. And there's a lot of... in the early issues, at least, there's a lot of, like, Alice in Wonderland stuff.
That's what I was going to ask, is it going to lead back to that? I mean...
Is she ever called Mother Panic, other than calling the nun Mother Panic?
I don't know. Not in this issue, at least...
See, like, the costume is
reminiscent
of short ears. It's an albino.
I was getting more
eyes.
Of a coyote feel from it.
Oh, that's true.
Personally. But I can totally see a rabbit, a coyote. And it's very interesting. So to talk about, like, her departure from, like, Batman and that kind of stuff, the fact that she does wear a white costume as opposed to Batman's black.
You're definitely
costume.
Right on that,
like,
one.
Like, symbolically, she's trying to be...
She's definitely trying to be her own, and it's like, we are nothing. We are not connected. We are nothing.
Yeah, I think the only thing that Batman would serve at is the fact that vigilantism is okay in Gotham City.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
Seriously. He's like, oh, you want to beat the crap out of that dude? Thank you. I was going to get that.
Yeah.
Lines my lot a wee bit.
Yeah, and she seems to also have, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but at one point she kind of like drops in on this one little girl who was like a victim of this creepy body bag guy, and like just to make sure she's fine basically. And I don't think we ever or we get too terribly much of that from Batman typically.
No,
the only times that I've ever really seen Batman go back for someone, if it's basically he's like, we have a problem and you're gonna fix it.
Kind of
deal.
That's the only that's if he's like, I need more information from this person.
Like, he cares
back.
About people, but he keeps his distance is what I've always gotten.
Staying more as a myth, even with the kids, is more important. So.
Yeah, so she's actually trying to, like, connect on the personal level, too, with these victims of crimes that she's trying to stop. So
Interesting, awesome parallels about being a victim and then
coming in out this to be actually a hero. And the guy,
well, I think that's probably what gives her that as well, is like, hey, you're the guy who hurt you, he's gone. Batman doesn't do that. He's not like, hey, by the way, the dude that hurt you, he's gone. No, she comes in and she, you know, from what I just looking at what I've seen, it's, hey, this guy is gone, he can't hurt you anymore kind of deals.
Well, actually, speaking of victimism, like, the guy is giving, like, his, like, really creepy bad guy monologue about, like, why he's right in doing this, and he's literally, telling her that he's here to erase victims and make them stronger, and so that they won't be harassed by people like him. Like this totally like weird thing,
like a narcissistic view.
Yeah, and like devil's advocate, I can see how that makes sense. It doesn't make it anywhere near right.
Yeah, and then definitely good to pick up. Really great issue.
Well, awesome. I was hoping we were going to have time to do two reviews apiece, but I think we're cutting it a little tight now.
Fair enough.
So, just thanks to Griffin Games and Comics for letting us record here and letting us have or borrow this wonderful microphone to use. So,
mm-hmm.
All right, everybody.
So tune into the 7.5 issue for all of the reviews that we're able to get in.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, everybody say bye.
Bye.